Hi, this is Jake.
I'm sitting in my room right now. It is a symmetrical square-shaped room.
Jake is at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor.
I have stuff on my dresser, like pictures and stuff, but that's about it.
He's a typical college kid.
I listen to music every day, a lot of the day.
But this is not a dorm room. It's a halfway house for students struggling with addiction. And Jake says he feels lucky to be here at all.
Love of mine, someday you will die.
Jake's life started out just right. He lived in a nice house on a nice block of a sophisticated New Jersey town. His dad worked for the NFL, his mom a couple days a week in finance. As long as Jake and his older brother did well, their parents weren't overly concerned about a little partying here or there.
I started smoking pot when I was 13.
Jake's mom grew up in Vermont in the 70s.
Kind of liked it. It was just something that was fun to do.
She says it was nothing that took over her life. And a generation later, it was the same for her oldest son, Ben, growing up in Montclair.
At least in our town, smoking pot is a rite of passage. Not everyone does it every day or even every weekend, but people do it.
The town of Montclair was even the first in New Jersey to welcome a medical marijuana dispensary last year. The state's medical marijuana regulations are among the strictest in the country. There's high security, and the place looks like a doctor's office, not a head shop. Joseph Stevens, one of the founders, says he thinks their sober operation will make marijuana seem less casual to kids.
Now they can associate marijuana with an illness instead of recreational use. You know, it's no more behind the scenes and cool to use marijuana.
But from where Montclair High School's head student counselor sits, the presence of medical marijuana in this town is just another in a slew of signals that marijuana is good, not bad.
You know, with all the glorification of legalization, with the decriminalization, and especially in Montclair now with the medical marijuana green leaf opening up, I think kids think that marijuana is like a miracle drug.
Andrew Evangelista says their casual attitudes toward marijuana aren't just because of legalization.
Because of media, how it's portrayed, movies, music.
Fine, said Ben and Jake's parents. We won't condone it, but we won't freak out about it.
We sort of accepted that as life in the suburbs.
That worked for the older brother, but not for Jake.
Hey, it's Jake.
I can't think of the name of the song. It's by Dido. I'm about to go to an interview for a pre-law fraternity that I'm looking to join. I'm hoping for the best.
In middle school, Jake was both incredibly successful and incredibly stressed out. He was popular, he got A's, and he was a soccer star, but he says his mind was always racing.
And my mom and dad always said to me, even at a very young age, like, you can't beat yourself up, Jake. It's not healthy.
When, as a high school freshman, Jake got bumped off the varsity soccer team,
I got this feeling, like, of the futility of life. And, you know, I have this sort of, like, internal ass-kicking machine where, like, I can't let myself just be okay. You know, I remember the first time I got high, I felt this, like, unbelievable sort of, like, relief just from the world, and I was on another planet, you know, and I didn't have to deal with reality.
By the end of his freshman year, he was smoking every weekend. Sophomore year, every day. His parents were worried, but when they talked to friends about it,
there was a lot of, you know, the hard-parting jock. No offense to the male population, but a lot of the dads were like, they were pretty hard-parting themselves and very successful men now. And so it was sort of like, you know, some chuckling about it because he was functioning so highly in every other way.
And there's plenty of evidence people can do that while stoned, especially if you're smoking weed all the time. Columbia University researcher Carl Hart studies how people behave on drugs, and the data suggests that for people who smoke pot 7 times a week,
when they are intoxicated, you don't see many changes in their cognitive functioning.
They're a little slower, but they're equally capable.
Yeah, if you use it a lot, you become tolerant to the disruptive effects.
I've played sports on weed, competitive sports. I've done homework on weed. I've taken tests on weed.
During his sophomore year, Jake's parents knew he was smoking pot. They would find empty bags and empty bottles of Visine. They argued with him.
If you can think of the worst thing you could possibly call your mother, I can just insert that. Oh, it was so awful.
And when they took him to therapists and doctors, They say they were told to chill out.
We were at the pediatrician, and I said that I was concerned about him. And so he said, well, let me take Jake in a room. And he spoke to Jake. And honestly, he came out and said to me, what do you want from this kid?
What do you want from the kid? You know, he's still getting good grades.
He got 1400s on his SATs.
And then I'd go see therapists, and they'd say, you know, the same exact thing. You know, look, he's getting good grades, and he's on varsity teams.
His pitch was, we were trying to make him into his brother. It was about us. That was the problem.
And what was your reaction to that?
Well, it played with my head. Maybe it was us.
I was very convincing, you know, and I could put on this adult face and act like I was, you know, a grown up and make it seem like things were all right.
For people with alcohol, cocaine, opioid dependence, lots of bad stuff is happening to them that they don't want to have happen. They may be getting arrested. They may have an overdose.
John Mariani studies and treats addicts. He's also with Columbia University. And he says, yep, you sure can become addicted to weed, but it can be hard to recognize.
Marijuana dependence is different. Often patients will have a philosophy that this is something I choose to do. It's something I enjoy. It's something I benefit from. And to some degree, that might be true.
The way his older brother Ben remembers it, Jake's parents were suffering more than he was.
Our house had like no energy, no sort of like love, no sort of feelings of being happy.
Ben says to him, addiction is defined by what a person will do to get high.
What lengths would they go to? Because the lengths that my brother went to that I personally witnessed were pretty out there. It wasn't normal behavior.
You know, I'd steal money from my mom's purse. I would, you know, take 60 and she wouldn't think to even look to notice.
When she did notice and started hiding her purse, Jake lifted his dad's NFL memorabilia.
My dad worked at the NFL for 30 years. He had a lot of stuff that was worth some money, and, you know, I would give it to my friend to sell on eBay. And I probably sold, you know, $1,000, $2,000 worth of, you know, merchandise to buy drugs. I kept trying to chase that first high, right, that first feeling of euphoria that I got when I smoked. And, you know, I think I started doing it so much that, like, the effects stopped being so potent.
That is how addiction works, Dr. Mariani says.
If you expose your brain to any chemical regularly over time, neuroadaptive changes take place.
There's something called cannabinoids in marijuana, and they're similar to a chemical our brains normally produce on their own, endocannabinoids. They're thought to help regulate mood, sleep, and appetite. Mariani says if you smoke pot all the time, the plant becomes your supply of the cannabinoids, and your brain stops producing its own.
You might have an individual who's using marijuana regularly who starts to feel a little bit irritable after they haven't smoked for a while, and then they smoke. And their experience of that can be that I'm feeling better from smoking. But really what they're doing is treating withdrawal.
Why do some people experience addiction and others don't?
The short answer is we don't know. It's some mixture of genes, environment, and development. And so we're trying to understand those factors, but we're very early stages of research.
In retrospect, Jake and his parents both say he's what people call wired for addiction. And marijuana was the drug that hooked him because it was easy to get and easy to keep up. But while his parents were still trying to understand what had happened, Jake started looking for other highs too.
I smoked pot every day. That was a given. But it was like I knew that wasn't enough. You know, I would go in my dad's medicine cabinet and be like, well, maybe all these pills in my parents' cabinet have some sort of effect that could be euphoric, and maybe if I snort it, it'll be even more powerful. And, you know, so I started to snort Ambien, and I started to snort Percocet, and certain things that I didn't even know what they were. I would look them up on my phone. It just became this obsessive thing, like I was looking for anything I could find to make myself feel better.
Jake says his parents didn't know the extent of it, but by his senior year, they did fully understand he was an addict.
And one night we confronted him and said, we cannot live like this. You have to get help. Gene said, you cannot stay in this house. And he left the house without a phone and he was gone all night.
And I remember thinking, this is the best thing that could possibly happen to me because now I can go to my friend's house, get high all night, sleep there, and not have to worry about my parents thinking, like, where's Jake and let's get him home right now.
For me personally, it was hell. It was like being in hell that night. I couldn't call him and say, come back, we'll work this out.
Jake called her the next morning.
And, you know, we went home and, you know, I just started crying and crying and she started crying. And, you know, I was like, Mom, I think I need help. And, you know, they started looking for treatment centers.
Jake was lucky in so many ways. He had two concerned parents who could afford to send him to several top-notch rehab programs away from home. While there, he applied to college, and he was accepted at several top schools. On paper, the consequences he suffered didn't add up to a lot. But if his parents hadn't intervened when they did, they say they're sure something catastrophic would have happened. And that's why they decided to speak publicly about it.
How does marijuana really affect your teen?
Last spring, Jake's parents told their story on a panel at Montclair High School, aiming to warn about the risks of marijuana.
How strong the marijuana is, how much THC is in the marijuana.
Local news covered the event, and in comments, one reader called it fear-mongering. Another said when young people say the risks of marijuana are minimal, they're 100% correct. A hot debate about legalization followed. And that conversation, John Mariani says, tends to blur the issue for people struggling with addiction.
Especially young patients will come in. It's almost like a political debate about whether people should be allowed to smoke or not. That's not the issue. It's not whether the right answer for society is for it to be legal or not, but what is the answer for you as an individual? Let's look at the facts in your life.
Jake says he thinks marijuana should be legalized. His parents say it shouldn't. But they all agree that using it at a young age was a disaster for Jake.
I have this thing about me, and I think, you know, it's this predisposition to, like, be addictive.
And teenagers are more susceptible to addiction than adults.
If I was never exposed to marijuana, I would have been able to hold off my addictive tendencies a lot longer. I think marijuana expedited my addictive personality.
I lived it firsthand. I saw my son become someone I didn't know.
Hey, it's Jake. About to head to a meeting. There's no combination
of words. Jake and his parents say they chose the University of Michigan because it was one of the very few colleges that had an on-campus recovery program. His struggle is not over. On a dark day near the end of his freshman year, with 10 months clean, he says he drove to Detroit with a friend, scored some heroin, and took what he thought was enough to kill himself.
Next thing I know, you know, it was 14 hours later, I woke up, puke everywhere, a big bruise on my face, not really knowing what happened. And the first thing I think about is, why am I still here?
Jake says he's learned from his mistakes. He's still at Michigan. He's clean again. He made it into his pre-law fraternity. And he's trying to remain part of typical student life while not participating in one of the most typical parts of it. He says every once in a while, he still thinks, oh, I can just smoke a joint or have a drink.
And in that moment, it feels great. And, you know, I think everything's going to be okay. And then it stopped being fun because I can't stop, you know. I don't know how to stop.
To argue about whether marijuana should be legalized, you have to debate global politics, criminal justice, health, medicine, addiction. And you can probably use Jake's story to come down on any side. Jake's parents, they know the stats that addiction rates are lower for marijuana than most other drugs, including alcohol and cigarettes. But as marijuana becomes increasingly accepted, they want people to recognize that addiction is a real possibility and look out for the signs. For WNYC, I'm Marianne McCune.